Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and I'm on Twitter at BobbyFantasyPro. We had some technical difficulties Monday, so we had to put the show off. I'm really glad Dan Harris was getting that quick hitting content on his new opening drive podcast, and I really appreciate y'all being patient and the kind words asking when we were going to have another show. We do plan on doing one almost every single week, diving into the news, listener mailbag questions that are applicable to almost everyone, and then top waiver wire pickups at the end of the show at each level of ownership. That's what we'll be doing on today's show, and we've got a great guest. It's Andrew Seifter. I get to do some of the editing on Fantasy Pros, primarily for DFS, but every once in a while I get to venture out and do one of Andrew's pieces, and he kills it every single time. So we're really fortunate to have him joining us for today's show. Give Andrew a follow on Twitter at his name, Andrew_Seifter. That's E-I-F-T-E-R. Andrew, I'm sure you're extremely passionate outside of sports, just like myself, but I really appreciate that your timeline is just full of baseball and football. That's what the people are here for, man. Food takes, of course.
Exactly. I got to up my game on the food takes. You got me beat on that one so far.
Well, why don't you start us off right now? What do you have for us?
For food takes?
Yeah. You a big fan of celery root puree like me?
I haven't tried butter on the pizza yet, I have to admit. So I'm open-minded about that kind of thing. So
I appreciate that. Yes.
I was actually just in Paris, and they put butter on everything, and let me tell you, it really does make it taste better. So
yeah, it really does. And the thing is, most people don't realize this, but most pizza has butter on it. It's not like you're just putting a big old stick of butter on top of it. It's like you paint it on the crust, and then you put everything else over top. What do you think cheesy breadsticks are? Like, I'm not some psycho, people. It's delicious.
It's a fair point. You know, for a long time, I was not one of those people that put butter on waffles. And then I finally tried it, and pancakes, and there's no going back once you do that.
You're right. So you guys are going to love the butter on pizza. Stop calling me names and everything until you give it a try. It's delicious, and I'm sorry if you die like 5 years earlier because of this advice. So, Andrew, let's dive into it because we have a lot to talk about. It's been a while since we had a podcast. We've got a lot of news. We've got some early reactions talking about the closer battles and what actually happened here. Some awesome questions in the listener mailbag. And like I mentioned, we're going to be diving into the waiver wire, giving our top pickups at each range of ownership. So 40 to 60%, 20 to 40%, 20 and lower. We'll hit pitchers and hitters. All right, guys, we're going to get into the injuries in just a second. But today's show first is sponsored by Pristine Auction. I got a case for my signed baseballs on Pristine Auction the other day because I've got so many of them. I couldn't help myself. I saw a signed Julio Urias baseball for just $30. And a lot of these things, you know, they can get up to $60, $70. In Mickey Mantle's case, I saw a Mickey Mantle one, like $200, right? And I had to get this one because I think it's going to blow up. This guy is an absolute monster. And I've got all these baseballs. And I was like, you know what? I need to put them in a display case so they look really nice in my office. I was able to get one at Pristine Auction in the bidding. They auction off hundreds of items every single day. So you can find some great values. Signed baseballs, signed jerseys, signed helmets, all kinds of cool stuff. Venture into football, basketball, even art and celebrity stuff if you want that. My dad wanted some help finding something for his friend, so I just showed it to him, and he found a ton of great options in just seconds. No matter who your team is, you will find something. Everything's guaranteed authentic from the most trusted sources. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. So let's start with the injury news, and Trey Turner is out with a broken finger. Francisco Lindor out 3 to 4 more weeks with the ankle injury. And I actually think this is going to help Lindor because he was coming back so early with that strained calf that he had. And I think his stolen bases were going to be in the 8 to 12 range instead of the 25-30. At this point, he might see a full recovery and we might get the actual Francisco Lindor. What do you think about that?
It's definitely possible. I'm kind of taking more of a wait and see approach in terms of the stolen bases in particular. I think anytime you've got leg injuries, you know, stolen bases are such a fluid kind of statistic. It's really, does the player want to run? Does the manager want the guy to run? Francisco Lindor can do a lot to help the Indians win games without stealing bases. So there, I think there's a little bit of concern there that maybe they don't push him too hard on that front. But he's going to be a very, very good player, even if he doesn't run that much. Because, I mean, he just took such a step forward in terms of his power and run production capabilities last year. We already knew he could hit for a high average. So, you know, four category players in fantasy baseball sometimes get to be underappreciated a little bit, but they can still be, you know, top 10 hitters. So I'm not too worried about him.
You take out his stolen bases and he's basically Manny Machado, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I don't think anyone would complain about that too much.
Exactly. So I had a bunch of people asking me this question. Like, when you draft Trey Turner, you're banking on him carrying you in stolen bases in Roto. With him being out however long he's going to be, 3 to 6 weeks it sounds like, do you need to go out and trade for or at least pick up a high stolen base guy?
I would definitely focus on stolen bases in my waiver pickups. I wouldn't say that you necessarily need to go out and trade for a guy. I think, you know, we need to sort of see how long Turner's going to be out. And then also, I think, keep in mind with Turner, he's such a stolen base guy that even if he misses a month or two, he could still lead the league or come close to leading the league in stolen bases. So you can make up that stat in a hurry when he comes back. So, you know, there's some options out there on the waiver wire you can get that can maybe get you, you know, 15, 20 stolen bases over a full season. And, you know, I think that would be enough to kind of keep you competitive in the stat until he returns.
Yeah, and seeing all these people panic like, man, I'm going to lose the stolen base category 3 out of 4 weeks now that he's gone. Does that not tell you how valuable this guy is?
I was pretty high on him going into the season. I was thinking maybe the talk about 70 steals was a little bit of preseason talk that wouldn't actually manifest itself. But from the first few games of the season, it really looked like that was a realistic possibility. So, you know, thankfully it's a hand injury. It's not a leg injury. It's a bummer for his owners, no doubt. But, you know, he should be running early and often as soon as he's back. And it's going to, you know, he's still going to be that first round player once he's back.
70 stolen bases. What do people think he is? Adalberto Mondesi? He's not going to be able to steal bases hitting all these triples and inside the park homers, though. He's only got one so far.
I know. It's the only player in baseball where you would actually complain when he hits a triple. You'd rather have that single, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yep, absolutely. All right. Justin Upton is going to be out 2 to 3 months with turf toe. I don't really understand how that can cripple you for so long, but, you know, it is what it is. Corey Knebel out for the year. We talked about it the previous couple podcasts, expecting this may happen. Josh Hader has taken over early. That's because Jeremy Jeffress is out. And what I'm wondering is if you would pick up Jeffress, he's 27% owned right now. He was fantastic last year. And then there's another sleeper here, Matt Albers, who was just exceptional in 2017 before a really rough 2018. He started off hot. I'm wondering if Jeffress' injury lingers a little bit longer. Maybe they'll stick Hader back in that Josh Hader role and Albers takes over as closer.
That's certainly possible. I think that if they wanted Albers to be closing, though, he might be doing it already. And it seems like they're comfortable using Hader in that role for right now. I am very high on Jeffress, though. I do think as long as he doesn't have a setback in his recovery, I think it would make a lot of sense for them to install him in the closer role once he's back. I think they have a lot of trust in him and a lot of faith in him. And I think that once he is back, then they can, you know, they can use Hader the way they really want to use him, which is in multi-inning role, putting out fire, facing the heart of the order, whether it's in the 6th, 7th, 8th innings or the 9th, it doesn't matter. You know, that guy's just unstoppable. But Jeffress is, you know, underappreciated. He was actually the 4th most valuable relief pitcher in all of baseball in 5x5 leagues last year. And that's only with 15 saves.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
One of the only guys ahead of him was Hader. The other two were the obvious ones, Edwin Diaz and Blake Treinen. But yeah, he was an incredibly valuable player last year.
It might have been inflated. I think he had 8 wins. But yeah, he was really, really good. So let me ask you this. Okay, everyone listening to the podcast, at least, you know, a good majority of them probably drafted some shares of Trevor May. And we're going to get to that. That Twins bullpen is a disaster right now. It's a true committee. Would you drop Trevor May and pick up Jeremy Jeffress if you've got a bench spot available?
I think I would, yeah, especially if your primary goal is to get saves. You know, I think the Twins bullpen is interesting because those guys are all guys who can help you out a little bit in the ratios. Particularly, I think May and Rogers, maybe not Parker quite as much, but those are all guys who certainly aren't going to hurt you in their ratio. So, you know, they're not bad players to have. They'll pick up a save here and there and help you out elsewhere a little bit. But, you know, I think Jeffress has so much more upside. He's the one that could actually hold the job all to his own and, you know, put up ratios that are every bit as good, if not better, than those other guys. So I think May's good, but I think you can find guys like that on the waiver wire, Diego Castillo type pitchers. So I don't think he's a must hold.
You know, earlier in the week, I was holding out hope that maybe the Rogers save was just a fluke because, you know, he was going up against lefties. But then they threw May for five outs, and they brought in Parker for a save, and they just really have a true committee. So I'm out. When we drafted Trevor May, it was kind of a lottery ticket. I expected him to be the closer. Didn't work out that way. Same with Ryan Brazier. It looks like Matt Barnes is the guy. You draft him late, you don't really lose that much. It's not as much of a risk. But they had the upside to get 35, 40 saves in very good teams and post-quality ratios. So you cut them, and you know, there's no sense in hanging on to someone who's not going to help you. I don't think May's going to help you enough. So yeah. I would drop him for Jeremy Jeffress and maybe some of the guys we'll talk about later.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, if I had to bet on one Twins reliever to finish with the most saves right now, it's kind of a sneaky bet, but I would bet on Rogers because he's the left-hander. So, you know, if May and Parker keep splitting the righty lineups, you know, Rogers could just kind of be under the radar and end up, you know, slightly beating those guys out in saves.
Yeah, and I'll say this, Rocco Baldelli, he's not going to be popular in the fantasy community because what he's doing to screw us all over, but you know what? He looks excellent for the Twins so far, and I love hearing his media appearances where he's talking to these guys, asking them, you know, if he looked at the numbers, and he just trolls them and says, you know, I just go based on my gut feeling, and then everyone's panicking, thinking that this guy's just a nut. Rocco Baldelli's as good as it gets. I'm pretty pumped that he got a job.
Yeah, and the Indians have really left the door open for the Twins to give them a run for their money in that division this year.
There's a couple teams, man. The Red Sox and Yankees are falling apart. They've got so many injuries. Miguel Andujar, you know, has a labrum. He might be out for the season. They've also got like eight other guys. Do you think the Rays can actually win this thing in the American League East?
I wouldn't bet on it, but the Rays are one of those teams that just always seems to sneak up on you. You don't think they're going to compete, and then there they are. You know, you're in August, September, and they're still in the thick of it, whether it's the wild card or the division. So I wouldn't count them out. I still think the Red Sox are the team to beat in the division, especially with the Yankees having all those injuries. But you never know. I mean, anything can happen. Even Baltimore's won four games so far.
Their pitching has been good. I'm really surprised by it. But yeah, I mean, the Yankees, I had them as the World Series winner. We'll see with all these injuries. Red Sox are probably number two or number three with the Dodgers and Astros competing with them. But the Rays, you look at their depth chart, and it's filled with talent. They've got to stay healthy, of course, but they've got Jose Alvarado and Diego Castillo in that great bullpen. Blake Snell leading as a true ace. Depends on what happens with Tyler Glass now. Brent Honeywell coming up. Charlie Morton's a great pitcher. They've got all kinds of arms. I'd love to see them pull it off. I don't think that they probably will, but they look like a true playoff contender.
I'm glad you gave a shout out to Morton. He was one of my favorite value picks at starting pitcher this year. People get scared off because he's old and, you know, he's not going to throw 200 innings, but man, that guy really found his game when he was in Houston, and he looks to have carried it over completely to Tampa. So he's the kind of player that can give you well over a strikeout an inning, an ERA in the 3-350 range, and a really helpful whip. And as you said, Tampa should be pretty good this year, so the wins could be there as well.
All right, continuing with the injury news. Man, this is a real big bummer for me because I have Daniel Murphy and Scooter Jeanette everywhere. They are both out, so we're going to be looking to pick up a second baseman. It looks like we're a little bit late on Colton Wong. What do you think about Colton Wong? Do you believe in this breakout?
I don't fully believe in it, no. It's anything can happen. He's still young, and he was once a pretty highly regarded prospect, maybe more so for the glove than the bat, though, honestly. You know, I think the thing with Wong is just based on everything we've seen, both in his minor league and major league career to this point, it's hard to expect him to hit for a high average. It's hard to expect him to hit more than, you know, maybe 10, at most 15 home runs. And he's batting right at the bottom of the order there, so he's going to have trouble accumulating a lot of runs and RBIs. So I really think the key to his value is he's going to have to run a lot. You know, we're talking at least 20, 25 stolen bases to stay in the conversation at all in mixed leagues. I don't have any problem picking him up while he's hot, especially because he is, as I said, you know, not that old, and maybe he's having a breakthrough, but I'd say the odds are kind of against it.
We've been waiting for this for years, and 1 year he did bat 285, but he had no power or speed. 1 year, he hit 12 homers, stole 20 bases, and just 400 at-bats. We've never seen him put it fully together, but this is who Colton Wong is, right? It's like Matt Adams. How many times have we seen a stretch where Matt Adams just tears the cover off the ball? Colton Wong's the same exact way, and then he'll have a month where he bats 120. That's who Colton Wong is. This is just a hot time. Pick him up now, sure, but don't expect him to carry you the rest of the season. It's not going to work out.
Yeah, I just dropped him actually, and I picked him up and for a day, and then decided to drop him for Ketel Marte. So I just felt a little more positive about Marte because he's a little bit younger, and he's also got some nice multi-position eligibility. So he's kind of an ideal guy to have on your bench in a daily lineups league, because if anyone's sitting out, you could just pop him right in there at second base, shortstop, outfield.
Final injury piece, and this one is also with the Cardinals. Not that Colton Wong is injured, don't hear that wrong. Marcell Ozuna is going for an MRI, and by the time this show's published, we may hear that he's out for the season. They're acting like it's not a big deal, but if you hear that stuff, you got to know the teams. The Cardinals have said so many times, it's not a big deal. He might be out for just a little bit, short DL stint, then he's out for the year. They just lied to us. I'm really worried about Marcell Ozuna. And I think this means we need to pick up Tyler O'Neill now. He's looked good so far. Maybe it's Jose Martinez who takes the plate appearances, but Tyler O'Neill's looked fantastic. He's excellent in the field, and I'm expecting him to jump into this lineup and immediately become a Randall Grichuk type of asset.
Yeah, that's an interesting name for sure. I actually really like both O'Neill and Martinez in terms of their ability to produce in fantasy. If either of those guys gets regular playing time, they could become a must-start option pretty quickly. You know, O'Neill has a little wider range of potential outcomes, I feel like, just because he is so young. But, man, his upside is sky high. And Martinez, every time the guy gets a chance to play, he hits. You know, his fielding's awful. But, man, that guy...
I don't think awful is a strong enough word. He is the worst.
Yeah, but he's a good example of, you know, those four-category guys getting a little underappreciated, I think.
Yeah.
In past seasons when he was getting the at-bats. So we'll see what happens. I was actually out on Ozuna this season completely. So, you never root for injuries, but I thankfully don't have any shares of him. I just think you look at his numbers, and 2017 is such a dramatic outlier from everything else in his career. I look at last year, and a lot of people felt like that was the outlier, but then you look at 2016, 2015, 2014, he was that same player. So I just think we've seen enough from him at this point that it wasn't really realistic to expect him to have another, 35 to 40 homer, 120 RBI kind of a season.
You know, I thought that it was just his shoulder last year, and it very well may have been, but then why would I not be worried about the shoulder this year? I kept preaching on, avoid injury optimism on all these pitchers, Clayton Kershaw, Luis Severino, all these guys, right? And then I'm super pumped about Marcell Ozuna. What is wrong with me?
Hey, you're just an optimist for your Cardinals. That's okay.
Oh, man. No, I'm not. I don't have them making the playoffs. I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I picked the Brewers, and man, do the Brewers look really good. But Ozuna, I just thought, hey, maybe this will actually happen. I thought he could maybe make that big leap. I didn't get a ton of shares, but I got more than I should have, knowing what we knew.
I can see it. You know, when a guy has a year like he had in 2017, it certainly gets your attention. And he did have that injury last year, so I could see the narrative for it. I just felt like there was enough in the body of his career to be a little bit skeptical of it.
And plus, so many outfielders in that range. I mean, you could go get Yasiel Puig, and I understand he isn't off to the best start or anything like that, but he doesn't have like a serious shoulder concern or anything like that. I just feel like a big goober. All right, let's move on over to the closer battles. Hunter Strickland, we were just talking about him a week ago that he took the closer job. Now he's out. Who is his replacement going to be? Is it Cody Gearin? Do we even want to pick up the Mariners closer?
Only if you're really hungry for saves. I do think Anthony Swarzak is probably the current favorite to lead the team in saves. He has had a pretty thoroughly mediocre career, though. So, he could be one of those guys that really hurts you a lot in your ratios, where you have to really, suck it up and take the pain to get the saves. So I'm generally not a big fan of rostering those kind of players. You know, that's why
he had a 6.1 ERA last year. Holy cow.
Yeah, exactly. So if he has that again, I don't think he'll keep the closer role very long. But he did get the most recent one. And their bullpen is just such a kind of unproven disaster zone that he sort of is the veteran in that bullpen right now and probably steps into the role.
You know, my early reaction was, I don't want the closer for the Seattle Mariners. And then I thought, wait a second. He's not going to be Edwin Diaz, but Edwin Diaz did have 57 saves last season. That means at least 57 save opportunities. I'm not saying that's going to happen again. That was probably a fluke, but we're probably looking at 40 here. Let's say that Anthony Swarzak does return to 2017, where, he carried a 2.33 ERA, 91 Ks in 77 innings, 1.03 whip. That might be a top 10 closer.
It's possible. That was kind of an outlier for him for his career as a whole, though. I don't worry too much about the win totals for teams when I'm going after closers. Like you said, you know, a closer can be on a team that doesn't win that many games, and they can still get a whole bunch of saves. So to me, the win total for the team is more of a tiebreaker for closers. I'm much more interested in getting an elite strikeout rate, great whip, and ERA along with my saves. And so I would actually prefer to have guys who are kind of may not have the job exclusively to themselves. Like you mentioned Matt Barnes earlier, you know, he might only get 2/3 of the Red Sox saves because Brazier's a good pitcher too.
Yeah, he did get a save opportunity last night.
Yeah, exactly. But Barnes is going to strike out, you know, so many more batters than a guy like Swarzak, and he's going to, you know, have a good ERA. His whip might be a little inflated, but he's not going to blow up on you, you know? So I'd rather have a guy in a part-time role who's going to help you out elsewhere while getting some saves than like the closer on a team where he's going to put up a 135, 140 whip or something like that.
Let me ask you this. Matt Barnes, you say he's probably going to get 2/3 of the saves, and I would agree with that. I think both these guys are solid. Whoever got the job was going to hang on to it. I thought Brazier was a little bit better, but Barnes does strike out more guys. He has some control issues. Would you rather have 2/3 of the Red Sox saves or all of the Orioles saves with Michael Givens? Because I think Barnes and Givens are the same pitcher, just in different situations.
I think Barnes is probably better, but I also think that Michael Givens is not going to get anywhere near all of the saves for Baltimore. He may not even get any of the saves for Baltimore. They've been given a bunch of other guys opportunities so far. So I'm all out on the Orioles bullpen. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
What are they going to win, 40 more games this year?
Yeah, exactly. And every guy in that bullpen is capable of completely destroying your ratios too. So it's just not worth it.
All right. We already talked about the Twins. Let's move on to the Cubs, where Pedro Strop has the job, but he's struggling. And this makes me think, you know, I was initially imagining Brandon Morrow, when he comes back, might not have the job waiting for him. At this point, with Pedro Strop struggling, I think Morrow's a great pickup. I mean, the Cubs are bad right now. They're not going to be bad the rest of the season. He's only 34% owned, and that is dropping. I could see him, you know, returning to form, and he's going to be back late April, so you've got to have the bench spots available, but this is somebody I'd like to pick up right now.
Oh, yeah, I think Morrow's an excellent stash. I slightly prefer Jeffress, who we mentioned before, but I think if you're in a league where it's really hard to get your hands on saves, a lot of people tend to forget about the injured guys, and they don't have the patience to wait it out. So you can get far in fantasy sports just by being patient and taking the long-term outlook. I still personally think Strop has a good chance to right the ship and hold on to the job. I mean, he's barely pitched so far, so we can't really hold one outing against him too much. You know, I think he's still got a little bit of time to settle in the role. You know, and Joe Maddon, if he's shown anything in his managerial career, it's that he's never going to feel pressure to go, with the conventional route. So I think he'll just go with, if it's working out for Strop. When Mara returns, I think Strop holds on to the job, but it's entirely possible that it's not, and then Mara would be an impact player.
It's a very small sample size with what Strop's doing, and we've seen him be consistent and reliable year to year, so I agree. I think he will bounce back. Mara over the last 3 years, though, has been dominant. 1.79 ERA, 1.05 WHIP. Those are really good numbers, and Strop's been great, but not quite that good. So we'll see what happens here. He is getting up there in age. He's had the injury issues, and Brandon Morrow has been a beast.
Yeah, and, you know, with those kind of ratios, you can have some value in a lot of leagues, even if you're not closing. So, you know, I think he's a good stash for sure.
So Sergio Romo got the job over Drew Steckenrider in Miami. Not really fond of either of these guys. I've got Romo right now as the 42nd relief pitcher in my rankings, if I can remember right. And you have to remember, there's only like, obviously, 30 closers in baseball. So I've got a lot of middle relievers like Ryan Pressly over him. Reyes Moranta from San Francisco, who may get the job from Will Smith once they trade him midseason. By the way, Will Smith was named the closer in San Francisco. That's not a big surprise, but we thought it might be Mark Melancon. I want to ask you, though, about Jordan Hicks. So we thought he was going to be the closer. He is the closer. Andrew Miller's there. Alex Reyes is there. Carlos Martinez might be there soon, and that one concerns me. But he hasn't been pitching well. Is he on the hot seat? Do you think they would yank him out of the closer's role pretty quick and maybe give it to someone more steady like John Brebbia?
I mean, I don't really think Hicks has the closer job all to himself, even now. I don't think he ever really did. I think the Cardinals, you know, made pretty clear, I think, that they were going to not name one closer. They did sort of hint that Hicks would be the primary guy, but you know, I sort of feel like Andrew Miller is going to get some chances here and there. Alex Reyes actually got a chance yesterday and couldn't handle it. But, you know, I think that it could be a bit of mixing and matching there. And then maybe Carlos Martinez reemerges at some point and ends up taking the job. So I think with the Cardinals bullpen, you really have to look at, you know, are these guys helping me elsewhere? Because I don't think you can count on one of them, even Hicks, to tally all the saves.
All right, we're going to get to the listener mailbag in just a second, but first I want to talk about another one of the sponsors of today's show, TickPick. So I told you guys that I got opening day tickets on TickPick for the Cardinals, and that was supposed to be today. We're recording here on Thursday, but we got so much rain, they knew it was coming, that they decided to move the game back to Friday. It was super easy for me to put my tickets on TickPick and then get some for Saturday since I wasn't able to go on Friday. If you hate paying too much for tickets, you need to check out TickPick. TickPick is easily the fastest, cheapest, easiest app to use for purchasing tickets to all your favorite events, sports, concerts, theater, you name it. There's no fees, and all tickets are 100% authentic. Just think StubHub without the fees. TickPick empowers customers to score the best tickets on any budget. You'll get the same tickets from the same seller, but absolutely zero fees. And you'll end up saving 10 to 15% on every order as a result. Check this out. TickPick is giving all our listeners an amazing offer of $15 off an order of $99 or more. All you have to do is enter the promo code FPROS15, all one word, at checkout. Remember, that's TickPick, and use the promo code FPROS15 at checkout to save $15 off an order of $99 or more. Your price, your seat, no hidden fees. TickPick is where smart fans buy tickets. All right, on to the listener mailbag, Andrew. And if you guys want to send in questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com, or you can just tweet me at @BobbyFantasyPro. The first one comes from Twitter, and it's from Kale. He just wants a starter course in sabermetrics. He hears us throwing around these terms, you know, XFIP, WOBA, launch angle, everything like that. Andrew, where would you start? What is one sabermetric term that's really important to you?
For me, I would say I would look a lot at strikeout to walk ratio as a big one. That's just looking at what the pitcher controls themselves. You know, if they're missing bats, they're not putting men on base. If they're walking guys, they are. You know, the batted ball luck is going to vary a bit from year to year. You certainly want to look at BABIP, both for hitters and for pitchers, because that will give you a sense of the batted ball luck that hitters are having and whether pitchers are being really unlucky. But the thing that's in a pitcher's control is whether they're striking a guy out or walking him. And if they have that really high strikeout to walk ratio, then they've got a lot of margin for error where they can still be really successful.
I would agree with that. My very favorite is XFIP. It's basically an indicator ERA. So it shows what your ERA really should be, because ERA, it's a lot more reliable than wins for a pitcher, but it's not as reliable for future predictives as XFIP is, because there's still some luck within ERA. You know, you've got BABIP, which means batting average of balls in play, and that can really vary. It can be super lucky, like Rick Porcello when he won the Cy Young, or super unlucky, like the year before his Cy Young and the year after his Cy Young, where his ERA was really inflated. And so ERA can kind of be, just lucky or unlucky, whereas XFIP will tell you the true, you know, value of a pitcher's arm. And that tends to, you know, give an indicator of what his future ERA will be and thus his wins as a result. So I love XFIP. There's some other ones that people talk about a lot. Exit velocity, launch angle. And really what we're looking for is if a guy's hitting the ball hard on average every single time, or especially if he's hitting the ball above 110 miles per hour, not often, but if he's capable of doing that, especially 115, he's got crazy power. Like Franmil Reyes is always up there in exit velocity. And so that can tell us, like, yeah, the guy's in San Diego, so he's not going to hit quite as many. But if he was to go to a different park and we would see Franmil Reyes maybe in the Cleveland Indians in a trade with Trevor Bauer or Corey Kluber or something like that, he could totally be a 40 home run guy because of his exit velocity numbers.
All those outfielders in San Diego are pretty interesting. It's just such a logjam. If one of them can just get regular playing time, they're going to be a guy you definitely want on your roster. But we're still sort of seeing how that plays out. One other thing about sabermetrics I just wanted to mention real quickly in terms of my philosophy towards it is I think it's very important in terms of predicting future performance that you don't necessarily see in the surface stats in the box score. But I'd say it's more so that way for more unproven players than it is for guys who have been in the league for a really long time, because each of these metrics gives you a little piece of information, but not the entire story. So you can't just assume that a pitcher is going to have the same ERA as his FIP or his XFIP or his Sierra. It's going to be, you know, some pitchers are just, we find out over time, you know, the classic example, I think, is Chris Archer, where it's people are always expecting his ERA to drop because his sabermetric numbers suggest they should.
Yeah, and the opposite is Jose Quintana.
Yeah. And I think after you get to three or four seasons where a player is consistently outperforming or underperforming compared to their sabermetric stats, then I think you have to sort of, you have to emphasize the actual results they've given more at that point and say, you know, maybe there's something that these advanced stats aren't quite capturing about this particular player.
So I mentioned launch angle, and really what you're looking for is somebody who drives the ball in the air, because that's where extra base hits come from, especially home runs. Something else that I like to look at is home run to fly ball ratio. Like, you look at Juan Soto last year, and he had a home run like every 24% of fly balls he hit, which is just astronomical. That means it's unsustainable. He's not going to be able to continue doing that. And so you can look at these, you know, sample sizes and just say, okay, so this was actually a fluke. Wait, okay, this one is actually legitimate. There's all kinds of stuff like that. My favorite site, and we could talk about this for a long time, but if you guys just want to fish around and learn about sabermetrics, I would advise you go to baseballsavant.com and just toy around with it. Look at their leaderboard, type in a player's name, Chris Sale, and start seeing like XWOBA. What is that? It's expected WOBA. Expected WOBA against WOBA is the skill indicative metric for hitters. And so it will tell you, you know, how good a guy actually is as a hitter compared to what his real stats are. X means his expected stats. So based on his batted ball rates, how hard he hits the ball, the launch angle that he hits it, how often that becomes a double, a triple, a homer, an out, and so forth, it will give you an indication of what his batting average actually should be, what his batting average against actually should be. And so I would just advise you toy around on Baseball Savant. You'll be able to teach yourself really quick, and there's incredible information out there. Brooks Baseball, especially for pitchers, is a good one. Fangraphs obviously has a ton of incredible info. You could get lost on that site for a week.
Yeah, it's a beautiful time to be alive for us data nerds. There's just more and more numbers to crunch.
I mentioned Franmil Reyes. I want to talk about him and Hunter Renfro splitting time. At this point, 12-team league, do you just drop these guys?
I wouldn't make it a priority to own either of them right now, honestly. I think I still prefer Reyes of the two, just because I think he's got a little more upside and maybe a little better chance of grabbing the lion's share of the playing time. But yeah, in a 12-team league, it's really hard to wait too long with an outfielder who's not getting every day at bats, because there's just so many options on the waiver wire that you can plug in. You know, it depends on the depth of the league and how many bench spots you have and things like that, but they're certainly not must-own. No one that's not playing every day is a must-own player.
I agree. That's why I didn't understand people drafting Jose Martinez, and it looks like that one's going to bite me in the butt. Since I didn't get any shares, he's probably going to start playing, especially since Dexter Fowler is batting 100 again.
They love him, or at least they feel obligated to play him.
I guess so. Did you see that Instagram video where Dexter Fowler and Adam Wainwright and Yadi Molina were singing I've Got Friends in Low Places, and they were just drinking a Bud Light because they're all struggling so much? That was classy.
Oh man, I missed that one. I'll have to check that out.
All right, next listener mailbag question comes to us from Kevin in Florida. He wants to know how many IR spots each league should have. He says, my league has two and I've got seven injured guys. Should we bump it?
I think that there's a pretty solid argument for bumping it up to three. Most of my leagues still have two. I could go either way on it, because I do sort of like the strategy of having to deal with the chaos sometimes. And it sort of separates the great fantasy managers from the less great, those kind of things, because you have to think on your feet and you have to prioritize and figure those kind of things out. But it's painful when you have that many guys injured. And now that the guys are going on the IL for 10 days instead of 15, and you have teams like the Dodgers that are, you know, basically shuffling their starting pitchers on and off the IL, and more teams are going to follow suit with that, I think. So it's just, it's used in a different way by major league teams than it used to be. So I think it makes sense for fantasy leagues to probably react to that and add an extra one.
With the 10-day IL now, I think that it needs to be bumped. I'm actually a fan of unlimited IL spots, because that's what it's like in the major leagues, right? If a guy gets injured, well, you can pick somebody else up. I prefer it that way. Most of my leagues have settled at five. I think most of the leagues out there are still at two, but then I keep getting people on Twitter complaining to me like, why won't my league come out of this? I would advise you to bump it up next year. Whether it's three or five, that's some progress, and everyone in your league is going to have 3 to 5, 6, 7, 8 guys on the IL midseason because of all these 10-day ILs. So yeah, I mean, maybe there is some strategy in, you know, who do I keep? Who do I drop? Do I have an empty spot in my lineup? But I just think that's not as fun. I want a full lineup from everybody and, you know, to actually be able to pick up guys and use your bench and everything like that.
That makes sense. I just, the one thing I caution with unlimited spots would be, I know a lot of people in my leagues, and I'm probably one of them that would, if they had that option, would just pick up every injured guy.
That's what I do.
In the off the waiver wire you can and stash them all, you know? Because I got, I've been fortunate in some of my leagues so far with injuries, and I've been, you know, stashing guys like Didi Gregorius, who, you know, could be a really good shortstop, top 10 shortstop even for the second half of the season. So, you know, if you're lucky and you're not dealing with a bunch of injured players on your own roster, you can just go out and get guys like that and stash them, and they can make a huge difference in a few months.
All right, Andrew, last question, and this one is from everyone from everywhere. Where would you draft blank if drafts were today? So we're like, what, 8 days into the season? How much have your rankings actually changed, or is it pretty much the same?
They haven't changed very much. My rule for that sort of thing is that you can't change your rankings that much based on the actual statistics of the players alone. You need some sort of an underlying reason why their outlook has changed. There needs to be...
So like playing time or velocity going down, like Chris Sale, that's scary.
Exactly. That's a great example. Yeah, I think, you know, with closers, obviously their value can change a lot in a hurry because one guy is getting the job and he didn't have it yesterday. You know, it's kind of like running backs in football. But for most players, it's a 162-game season. And, you know, we've seen, you know, less than 5% of it so far. So it's, you just can't make any sort of drastic overreactions based on such a small sample size. So, like every player in the league is going to have a hot streak at some point in the year and a slump. And some of the guys, their hot streak will be the first week of the season, or their slump will be the first week of the season. So we just need to keep a big picture. That's kind of the name of the game in baseball and sort of what makes it such a great sport, really.
Yeah, if this was fantasy football, we would be in the middle of the third quarter of the first game of the season. You would not make any drastic decisions based on that. Like I saw a guy, he said, I just got offered Carlos Carrasco for Chris Paddock. I got to take that, right? Like, who is offering that stuff? I understand Chris Paddock had a great game. That's going to happen from time to time. What did you expect? Carlos Carrasco is amazing. He's a top 60 pick. Chris Paddock's good, but I still want to take him in the top 100. I was high on him. I had him in the top, you know, 200 before he was even named the starter, and I moved him up to like 150. I was as high as anybody. He's nowhere close to Carlos Carrasco. Guys, you can ruin your team if you panic right now, or you can take advantage of the people who are willing to ruin your team, so do that. Like, some people panic and dropped Freddy Peralta after his first bad start, and they are eating crow right now. Don't do the same thing on Matt Strom. I think he's going to be fine. Give him another start or two. Let's see what happens. Yeah, Chris Sale is lower because he's throwing like 70-mile-per-hour fastballs. Colton Wong, he's the same, just like you mentioned. He's going to have a hot streak at one point or another. If he did this in mid-June, batting 570 with, you know, 3 homers and 2 steals over 5 games, nobody would notice. Nobody would flinch. Nobody would pick him up. And right now he's 70% owned because everyone thinks he's all of a sudden a different player. I'm sorry, guys. He's probably not. This is going to happen to everyone at some point.
Absolutely. And I want to be in that league where I can get Carlos Carrasco for Paddock. I mean, just the innings limit alone on Paddock. I mean, there's just almost no chance that he can outperform Carrasco. And Carrasco was one of my favorite starters to take coming into this season. I just think he's been so consistent. You know, he doesn't have that elite upside of the top tier guys, but he, in terms of that second tier, it just doesn't get any more rock solid than Carrasco. And one bad start certainly doesn't change that.
All right, on over to the waiver wire, and we'll start with the 40 to 60% ownership range. For those of you in 10-team leagues, these guys are probably available, or at least most of them. You mentioned Julio Urias. I'm sure he's one of your favorites. I love him, too. Carlos Martinez is still out there. There's a chance he still gets back into the rotation, so I don't mind taking, you know, an upside flyer on him. He would have been a top 100 pick if he was in the rotation and not hurt. Joe Musgrove is out there. My favorite in this range, though, is Sir Anthony Dominguez. So Dellin Betances has been great for years. He's always a top 20 relief pitcher. Most of the time, he's top 15 or even top 10 because he goes 70 innings, strikes out 100-plus guys, great ratios. That's who Dominguez is. He's not the closer. He's going to get some save opportunities. I bet he finishes the year with 5 to 8 saves, maybe 5 wins as well, 100-plus Ks, sparkling ratios. You want this guy on your team.
Absolutely agree with that. He's a great example of the kind of guy I was talking about earlier that even though they're not going to maybe be the exclusive closer for his team, is still going to help you out so much elsewhere as well that they're going to have plenty of value. And Robertson's actually on the cusp of imploding right now. I still think he's going to get his act together. He's been too good for too long, but we've seen these kind of things happen with relievers where they just lose it suddenly sometimes. So there's certainly a potential there that if Robertson can't get his act together, that Dominguez does end up being the closer. But as you said, even if he's not the full-time closer, he's still going to be very useful.
And I want to say this about pitchers. When we go through the hitters list, there are guys that you can pick up if you need to replace people. But hitters are so much less volatile. That means their range of outcomes is a lot easier to predict. It's a lot smaller. Pitchers, these guys can absolutely break out. There's some names on this list that I wouldn't be surprised if they're an ace by the end of the season. You get pitchers like that all the time. Hitters like that are harder to find. Yeah, there's an Aaron Judge, JD Martinez every once in a while. Maybe you can steal them early in the season. But pitchers, that's who you really want to focus on at this point of the season.
Yes, definitely. And I do want to talk about Urias. I might have to get one of those autographed baseballs that you were mentioning earlier.
There you go.
Because I'm a big fan. You know, I didn't know it was possible to be a post-hype sleeper when you're still only 22 years old, but I think that's what we might have there.
He's younger than Walker Buehler. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, this guy was, you know, he was one of the most exciting young arms in baseball 2 years ago before he went under the knife for shoulder surgery. And, you know, it seems like a lot of people forgot about him over those 2 years, but he is actually throwing, in his first start this year, he was throwing harder than he ever has. He was hitting 95, 96 on the gun. And we all know that Los Angeles is a great place to pitch in terms of the ballpark. He's going to have a lot of lineup support, you know, run support. And, you know, he's probably not going to throw 150 innings, let alone 200. But in my mind, he's a must-start option just about every time he takes the hill, except maybe this week because he's going to Coors Field. But outside of that.
We'll see how many innings he throws. But the thing is, if he is available, you got to pick him up. I thought there was no chance he'd make the rotation. But then Clayton Kershaw got hurt. Rich Hill got hurt. He was great in the spring and they gave him a shot. I thought he was going to be in the bullpen. They'd ramp up his innings slowly. And the next year we'd get to see, you know, the full future ace. It's here now, guys. I mean, 4 years ago as a 19-year-old, he was the next Felix Hernandez. And yeah, he's been hurt, but nothing has changed in his skill set. He is still that elite. He had 77 innings, 84 Ks, 3.39 ERA as a teenager. This is somebody who is a future multiple-time Cy Young candidate, maybe annually. I would pick him up right now. He might be this year's Walker Buehler. And if not, he's at least serviceable.
Absolutely. And I must admit, I'm pretty much addicted to Dodgers starting pitchers.
Me too. I've got all of them.
I would love to have them all. I mean, I actually think you could probably finish first in the pitching categories in your league if you just owned 7 Dodgers pitchers.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, he is my number one pickup if he's available. Now, obviously, you could play in a 10-team league where some goon just dropped somebody really good. I mean, that does happen, so you got to look at your waiver wire. But in most cases, if he's available, he's going to be the best guy to pick up. I would spend a considerable fab on him, maybe 15-20%. I think that will get him.
I do also want to give a quick shout out to Brad Peacock, who is just sort of always underappreciated. I mean, that guy just gets consistent results, whether he's in the bullpen or in the rotation. And right now he's in the rotation and he's on a really good team. And the Astros have been just phenomenal at getting great numbers out of their starting pitchers. We haven't seen really any sort of drop off from their guys going from the bullpen to the rotation. They just know how to do it. And, you know, obviously he's going to get tons of run support. We don't know how long he's going to be in the rotation, but, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I just think when you have a starting pitcher, McHugh's the same way. When these guys are in the rotation, you got to go out and get them because they're going to be really valuable for as long as they're in that role.
It's a good name. You know who he is? He's Charlie Morton when he's in the rotation. Last time we saw him in the rotation, 21 starts. He went 13-2 with a 3.00 ERA, 1.18 whip, 161 Ks in 132 innings. That is really, really good pitching. That's a top 25 starting pitcher when he's in the rotation.
Yep, absolutely. Give me him all day.
All right, 20 to 40% range. I'll let you start us off here. Please don't take my guy, though, because I'm super pumped about him.
Oh, we'll have to see. I think it's actually time that we need to take Matthew Boyd seriously.
Oh, good call. I didn't have him on my list. This is a great call.
Yeah, he's not a guy I was on at all coming into the season. but he's got 23 strikeouts already in his first 11 and a third innings. And his current FIP is actually in the negatives. It's negative 0.07.
Oh, man.
And obviously all the caveats apply about small sample sizes. So we shouldn't overreact to that. But the reason I'm kind of optimistic about him is that there are some underlying explanations for his newfound success. Pitcher List actually had a really good piece over the winter about how he had a huge uptick in his fastball velocity about mid-season last year and carried that out through the rest of the year. And he also made some adjustments to his slider that just made it went from being like a really awful pitch to a very, very effective pitch. So I just think, you know, obviously he's not on a great team, but any guy that's missing bats as often as he is, I think should be stashed in all leagues just while you wait to see if it's for real.
You can say small sample size, and that's true, but there comes a point where if you are so dominant in any single start, 25 swinging strikes? Are you kidding me? In one game? Nobody does that. Justin Verlander doesn't do that. If Matt Boyd can do that once, he's got great stuff. I don't know where this came from. Do you remember Esteban Loaiza? I always bring up this, he was horrible. 5.16 ERA, 4.96, 5.90, 4.56. And then he had that season where he went from 5.71 to 21 wins, a 2.90 ERA. Suddenly he's leading the league in strikeouts. He's a leading Cy Young candidate. Guys like this come out of nowhere. It's just the nature of pitching. And I think Matt Boyd could be doing that right now. 25 swinging strikes in a game is nuts.
I agree. And he's only 28 years old. So it's not like, you know, there's not the potential that he could experience some growth at this stage in his career. You know, especially if you play in a pretty shallow 10 or 12 team league, there's going to be a bunch of starting pitchers on the wire you can go get if it doesn't work out. But just the upside of what he's doing right now, you don't want to miss out on that.
Yep, it is pretty rare, and we'll see what happens. Maybe the best thing about him is he pitches in the AL Central, where every single lineup is absolute trash.
It's true.
My favorite guy is Freddie Peralta. You probably all knew this was coming. Hopefully you have him on your team. If you don't, he's 27% owned. He was sensational in his last start. 8 innings, 2 base runners allowed, 11 starts. He's got the best fastball in baseball. Yeah, it's slow, but it has extreme movement, and it's just kind of tricky. It's hard to pick up. This is a guy last year who I've mentioned this stat in the preseason. If you're new to the show, I want to mention it again. There were 4 guys in baseball who finished in the top 5 in batting average against and top 10 in strikeouts per 9 innings. Freddie Peralta was one, along with Blake Snell, Max Scherzer, and Chris Sale. His fastball is extraordinary. He was 11.0 Ks per 9 last year. In the minor leagues, he was even better, 13.1. He's just got it. You can't teach dominance. He's got some control issues. But if he can harness that like he did in his last start, we're looking at an ace, guys.
Yeah, I love Peralta, too. I'm pretty high on all those young Brewer starters, actually. I like Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff a lot, too. But I think Peralta is my favorite of the three, just because, you know, he's the one that has shown the most swing and miss stuff, not just this so far this season, but last season as well. And as you said, it's just great stuff there. So it supports what he's doing. You know, I do think, you know, pitching in Milwaukee can be tough sometimes with the long ball, and that could bite him occasionally here and there.
And yeah, Burns gave up 3 homers.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that could be an issue for all 3 of them. And I also think they're all probably on some sort of an innings limit. I've heard actually a little bit of speculation that once Jimmy Nelson comes back, they might move to a 6-man rotation to sort of limit the innings of all 4 of those guys, which would make a lot of sense. But you know what? You don't need 200 innings from those guys for them to be useful, especially Peralta. So I agree. He's a great pickup.
Yeah, Corbin Burns did have 12 strikeouts. He's one to watch. His slider was just filthy against the Cardinals. Meanwhile, I mean, the Cardinals are batting like 190 as a team. So I'm not with like 30% strikeouts or something like that.
Colorado might be even worse.
Yeah, you're right. A couple other guys that I think are worth consideration in this range. I love Trevor Richards preseason. Still looks really good. Matt Strom, a lot of people dropped him after his bad start. Let's wait and see. His velocity was down. Maybe it was just one bad start. Maybe he had a bad dinner. I have no idea. Maybe he didn't sleep well that night, or maybe he's about to go on the DL for season-ending surgery. We have no idea. Let's just give him a little bit of time. And then Adam Ottavino, he's like maybe better than Sir Anthony Dominguez. Remember, he was in Coors last year and was still amazing. Yankee Stadium is still a hitter's park, but nowhere close to Coors, so we might get this year's version of Josh Hader if there is such a thing.
I love Adam Ottavino. that's a great call. I have him in my leagues, and you know, he's one of those pitchers that his strikeout rate is so incredible that even if he's not closing, he can make a big difference for you, especially if you're in an innings capped league. He's a huge difference maker. So, and Aroldis Chapman, you know, is another guy like Chris Sale who's struggling with velocity right now. I still think Chapman should be okay, but it's been rocky for him so far. And if he does lose the job or they need to give him a little bit of a break, Ottavino has proved that he's capable of closing games.
You think it's him over Betances?
Well, Betances is hurt right now. So, you know, I think that helps his cause. You know, he gets a little bit of a head start and he's been lights out so far this season too. So I do think it would make a lot of sense if they do want to give Chapman a little time off and use one of those IL designations we were talking about earlier. I think Ottavino could step right in there and be a dominant closer. But even if he's not, like I said, he's going to be a player worth owning regardless.
Do you have any other pitchers in this range that you want to talk about, or did we name them all?
I mean, I do think it's also interesting to talk about all the Marlins starters. You know, they're not sexy names because they're the Marlins, but you know, those guys have all been having various levels of success. They're all pretty young. I think it's, you know, hard to differentiate between them just because they're all so unproven. But if I had to pick one, and again, those names would be Trevor Richards, Pablo Lopez, Caleb Smith, and Sandy Alcantara. They've all done pretty well so far. I think if I had to pick one of them, I would probably go with Caleb Smith just because it's sort of similar to what you said about Peralta. He's the one of the Marlins guys who's shown the most swing and miss stuff so far. So, you know, wins are going to be tough to come by for any of these guys because they're the Marlins, but it is a fantastic pitcher's park. I think that Caleb Smith could provide some pretty decent ratios and strikeouts. Not the most exciting pick in the world, but given his ownership levels, you know, he's someone to look at in deeper leagues.
He had a higher strikeout rate last year than Corey Kluber and Noah Syndergaard before he got hurt.
That's a good stat.
Yeah, he was pretty good. So we'll see what happens. I do like all four of these guys. Now, obviously, I'm a bigger fan of Freddy Peralta and especially Julio Urias. But if you need to pick up somebody deeper, I definitely think that these Marlins names are good ones.
Yep, totally agreed.
Moving on to the next range, under 20% ownership. There's two names I especially like. One of them, Michael Pineda. You know, he was top five in XFIP before he got hurt. Wasn't sure what we were going to get coming back, but he looked really good in his first start. He's 18% owned. And my other favorite, in fact, I like this guy even more. You guys probably won't be surprised. Josh James. He was my favorite sleeper starting pitcher, you know, before he got hurt and lost out on the rotation job as a result of that. Now he's in the bullpen and he's just devastating. He looks absolutely incredible there. He throws over 100 miles per hour, so it shouldn't be a surprise. Struck out like 14 guys per nine in the minor leagues last year. Now he's in the bullpen, and maybe they'll put him in the rotation after a while when a spot opens up.
Yeah, Josh Ames definitely is a great player to stash. You know, I talked about earlier just how much success the Astros have had with their starting rotation. It seems no matter who you put in there, they're going to succeed. So if you take a guy who's got that great pedigree and that great talent, obviously, you know, the sky is the limit for what he can do. You know, you just have to be patient because they don't seem like they're in a huge hurry to move him in there. And you also have Forrest Whitley down there. So, you know, you don't know exactly how it's going to play out. But if you have a roster spot and you can afford to wait, he's the kind of player that could make a huge difference in the second half of the season.
What do you think about Jimmy Nelson?
I like Jimmy Nelson as a stash too. Guys that you can actually put on IL are particularly interesting because it doesn't cost you that roster spot if you have that free IL spot. And we'll have to see. You know, Jimmy Nelson was a great pitcher, but he's coming back from a major injury. So,
and who knows when he will be back.
Yeah, exactly. There seems to be some optimism. He can come back maybe sometime in May, which would be great. But, you know, injury optimism is always a dangerous game to play. So it could end up being June or July before you know it. But he's certainly, if you have a free IL spot, he's a player I'd love to stash as well. And Michael Pineda, I like as well, too. You know, it's been a few years, but there was a time not that long ago where he was seen as the next great pitcher out there. So he's got the great stuff, and, you know, he looked great in his first outing. So why not stash him and see how that story unfolds?
You don't even have to put him in your lineup. You don't have to use him if you've got a deeper bench. Just grab him, wait and see, and maybe he turns back into that ace that we all thought he could be. One other name I wanted to run by you, Jake Odorizzi. He's been reliable for most of his career. Last year, he dealt with an injury, and so his ERA was 4.49, not ideal. He did strike out a batter per inning, but he's got a career sub-4 ERA, struck out 11 in his first game, looked really good, and he's had problems going deeper into games, but if his control is actually fixed a little bit, maybe he'll be a little bit of a sleeper this year.
Yeah, he could be. I've never been a big fan of Odorizzi in the past, back when he was in Tampa, but Minnesota's a good situation, you know. Like you said, the division's just really awful in terms of the lineups, so he's going to get a lot of favorable matchups, just like Pineda. You know, I slightly prefer Pineda because I see the upside there a little bit more, but you know, he did strike out 11 batters in 6 innings in his first start, so that gets your attention. Again, he's another one of those players. There's so many of them early in the year, it's kind of hard to differentiate. So you might have to take a look at you know, Bobby and my rankings to see where we really stand on it. But you know, these are guys that if you have the space, it makes sense to just give them an ad and give them a week or two, see if they can kind of keep it going.
And the one other name I mentioned, Reyes Moranta. I think he's going to be the closer in San Francisco before long. He was really good last year. Now that's for really deep leagues. He's like 4% owned. Anyone else you like in this range for pitchers, or you want to move on over to hitters really quick?
I think we can move on to hitters.
Okay, sounds good. Who do you have in that 40 to 60% range for hitters? Like I mentioned, there are not many hitters that I like, so I'm just going to give you guys that if you're desperate and actually need someone, do it, but don't be dropping somebody that's actually useful.
All right, well, I got a few names for you here that I really like, so we'll see where that goes. Mikel Franco is one that I am very interested in.
He's amazing, isn't he?
He's got such interesting numbers. You know, we were talking about sabermetrics earlier, and his sabermetric numbers are very unusual. You know, he has a great contact rate, which is another thing. You know, strikeout rate for hitters is really important to look at as well, because if you're just putting the bat on the ball a lot, you're giving yourself a chance to get hits, you know. And he hasn't hit for a great average up to this point in his career, but he did hit 270 last season, which was the best he's done so far. And I think he actually could even go a little bit higher from there, just based on.
Last 4 months, he batted 290 with a 30 home run pace, and he was a top prospect before. Maybe the breakout happened already.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he missed about 30 games last year with a couple minor injuries, but nothing too serious to worry about long term. And if he had played the full year, you're right. I mean, he might have got to 30 home runs or close to it. So he plays in a fantastic lineup, a fantastic ballpark. He's hitting at the bottom of the order, but in that order, it doesn't really matter very much. I think he could quickly be seen in the same class as guys who are owned a lot more, like Travis Shaw, Mike Moustakas, Max Muncy, Matt Carpenter. These guys who will hit maybe 275 with 30 homers. I think he could be one of those guys.
I like it. Okay, so who are your other guys in this range?
Okay, this one's super boring, but boring guys help you win championships, and that's Adam Jones. You know, 2 years ago, he was the 31st best outfielder in standard 5x5 leagues. Which, you know, is a solid third outfielder in 12-team leagues. And last season, he was more of a fourth outfielder, which still isn't awful. It's not like the bottom fell out. But he did only hit 15 home runs last year, which made him even less exciting, I guess, than he would be otherwise. But the thing about that is his home run per fly ball rate last year was barely over 8%, which is like just about half of what he usually has for his home run per fly ball rate. You know, he looks like the power could be back this year, back to the, you know, 25 home run kind of range.
Wow, he's already got three of them. Yeah, 280 hitter every year, super durable, so the RBIs and runs will pile up. This is a good one.
And he's capable of hitting around 280. You know, obviously he won't steal bases, but he's hitting leadoff for the Diamondbacks also, so his counting stats should be pretty good. I mean, he's going to rack up a lot of runs scored, even in that lineup, hitting leadoff. And then there's been obviously a lot of talk about the humidor at Chase Field, but Chase Field, it's not a great park for home runs anymore, but it was actually a better overall park for offense last season than Camden Yards, which is kind of surprising. So he actually might be getting a slight park upgrade in some respects, even though it's counterintuitive. So boring player, but you know, he's if you're like a Giancarlo Stanton owner and you're really hurting and you need someone you can slot in right away and just feel safe and comfortable in the position, he's up for the job.
Mine are a bunch of guys who, you know, I would have recommended drafting before the season started. Nick Markakis for batting average. Jose Martinez, now that he's getting the job, that's actually not someone I recommended, but now I think he's going to be playing enough that you can own him. Chris Taylor, it looks like he's going to be playing now. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. started out rough, but I think he's going to be okay. CJ Cron was awesome last year, 30 homers. He started off pretty hot already, but the name that I like the most out of this group is another boring guy. It's Jay Bruce. He's 2 years removed. 2017, he hit 36 homers, 101 RBIs. Last year, he was banged up, and we didn't get a very good result. He was awesome in the spring. He started off already with three homers. I'd scoop him up right now before he hits 30 homers again.
I like that call a lot. I think the two previous years before last year was the player you would kind of expect him to be. 250, 30 homers, you know, mark it down. If he can just cut down on the strikeouts a little bit and get that batting average back up into the 250 range as opposed to 220, then yeah, he's absolutely going to be worth using in mixed leagues. And one other name I absolutely have to mention is Pete Alonso, who I'm sort of amazed is still owned in less than 60% of leagues. I mean, we're talking about the Mets' number one prospect, and a guy who hit 36 home runs last season between AA and AAA.
He's Reese Hoskins.
Yeah, he's off to a fantastic start. He's playing just about every day, even though they have Dominic Smith as well. And he's batting in the two hole, which is a great spot to be in. You know, so I think it's a little unclear where his batting average is ultimately going to settle because he does have a little bit of swing and miss to his game. But the 30 home run power is absolutely legit. And first base is pretty weak this season, so there's a lot of managers who probably don't love their current first baseman, and he's just got all kinds of upside. So he's a must-own player.
Don't sleep on the Mets, guys. I know the Nationals and Phillies and Braves are really good. Don't sleep on the Mets. They've got a good team this year.
Absolutely.
All right, 20 to 40% range, and there's a couple names that I like quite a bit here. I like them in the preseason, too. Miguel Sano is a stash when he comes back. I think he's essentially Reese Hoskins, and I know that's rubbed some people the wrong way who just love Reese Hoskins, but you look at their career lines, and Miguel Sano's batting average is right up there. Power is right up there. The difference is the lineup that they're in. Phillies are going to score more runs, and he's going to drive in more runs. But Miguel Sano is free right now. You can pick him up in 73% of leagues and stash him. Garrett Hampson, it looks like, is going to get some more starts. He's probably splitting time a little bit more than Mark Reynolds than we would like now that Daniel Murphy is out. But Garrett Hampson, if he gets, you know, in the lineup every day, could steal 40 bags. And then his teammate, Ryan McMahon. I know he's not off to the best start, but guys, this is somebody who could bat 290 with 20 home runs, driving a bunch of runs. He's essentially David Dahl without the stolen bases, and he qualifies at first, second, and third. So I would definitely scoop him up. And then again, Jorge Soler, I begged you guys to draft him. He's been all right this preseason, looked awesome in the spring. I think that he's just going to be a masher this year.
Yeah, those are good calls. I'm quite the Garrett Hampson truther.
Are you? Okay.
So, yeah, I am. I just think the kind of stolen base upside that he has is so rare in today's game.
With the batting average, too.
Yeah, exactly. And playing in Colorado, I think, can help translate that 300 batting average from the minors to the majors. You know, a lot of guys see the batting average drop off when they advance to the big leagues. But I think when you're going to Coors Field, that can make up for a lot of that. I would like to see him start hitting now because he's off to a little bit of a slow start, which it doesn't change my outlook about how he can play if he plays. But the problem is, even with Daniel Murphy hurt, they do still seem to want to get Mark Reynolds into the lineup occasionally. So I just want Hampson to prove that he deserves to be in there every day so he doesn't end up losing out to McMahon and Reynolds. But just some other names to think about there. I may have been a little early on this one, but Austin Barnes, if you're hurting at catcher, I feel like he's one of the few catchers out there that has legitimate upside. You know, last year, in a lot of leagues, what I tried to do was I tried to draft both him and Yasmani Grandal and sort of rotate them in the daily lineup league and see how it would work out. It didn't work out how I expected because Grandal was great in April and Barnes basically became an afterthought. So I ended up just dropping Barnes and keeping Grandal all season. But, you know, the potential is definitely there with Barnes. And this year he's splitting time to begin the year with Russell Martin.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, I think Martin's less of an obstacle than Grandal was for Barnes. And I just think you're going to be hard-pressed to find a catcher on the waiver wire who plays every day anyway. So if you're going to have to use a guy who's splitting time, you might as well go for a guy like Barnes who has shown some glimpses of the ability to hit double-digit home runs, steal double-digit bases, provide a batting average of close to 290 or maybe even 300 in a good year.
Yeah, OPS was 895 in 2017.
Exactly. I just don't think you see those kind of numbers from a catcher very often. So he's worth giving a shot if you're hurting at the position.
15 homers, 10 bags, a 270 batting average. That might not sound like much. That's a top six fantasy catcher, guys.
Exactly. And then I mentioned Ketel Marte before. You know, I think it's hard to know exactly what a breakout for Marte would look like, but he makes a ton of contact and has a little bit of speed and could be developing more power. He's only 25 years old. One thing to watch with him that's interesting is he moved up to the second spot in the batting order on Wednesday, which would be really great for his fantasy value if it's stuck, even if it's just against left-handed pitchers. And then, as I mentioned before, he has great position eligibility. He's second base and shortstop to begin the year. He's already gotten outfield eligibility in Yahoo leagues and other leagues with a five-game standard. And the ones he doesn't have it yet, he's going to have it soon because he's playing outfield all the time. So that makes him a really useful kind of tool in your tool shed. You know, maybe he's not an everyday starter for you, but he's a guy that you can plug in and get numbers. And then he has a similar profile to Jeff McNeil, actually, another Met. McNeil doesn't have the multi-position eligibility, but just like Marte, he makes a bunch of contact and, you know, is still pretty young and has some upside there. And I'm also starting to warm up a little bit to Christian Walker, who is a guy who was completely off my radar coming into the year.
Well, yeah, he was just going to start against lefties, but now that Jake Lamb's banged up, I mean, we're going to get to see a guy with, you know, he's kind of Mark Trumbo, right? I mean, he could be Jesus Aguilar now that he's playing full-time. He's already got three homers. He's mashed in the minors. He has 92 AAA homers already. He's finally getting his chance.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that actually is interesting to me is not only did he hit a lot of home runs in the minors, but he actually hit around 300 two different seasons. So, you know, like I said, you know, you have to take minor league batting averages a little bit with a grain of salt because it's a lot harder to hit big league pitching. But he might not be Mark Trumbo in terms of batting average. He might be able to, you know, at least hit 270 or something like that. And that could be pretty useful if it is combined with 25, 30 home runs.
All right, last range here, and I've got a couple names. I'm wondering if you're buying into them. I'm not exactly sure what to think about them. Christian Walker is the one that I like the most. The other ones are just kind of big question marks. Zach Cozart, we saw him have a big year a couple years ago. Alex Verdugo's playing quite a bit. Chad Pinder's got some upside. There's a lot of question marks in this range. Justin Bour's great against lefties. Yandy Diaz is a hot name. You don't have to answer all these guys. I'm just wondering. These are the names on my list that I'm considering, and I'm wondering what you think. Manny Margot, Jung-Ho Kang, and then Willian Zastadillo, and he's currently the MLB historical batting average king.
Well, that's a good title to have. Those last two names that you mentioned are definitely my favorites of the group. I mean, Kang was really good, actually.
He's always been good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when he first came to the majors from Korea, I mean, he had two straight seasons, I believe, with almost 30 home run pace. He didn't play full seasons, but he had a lot of power. One of those years, he had a pretty good batting average to go along with it. I think he might have been a little unlucky the other season, you know. So I think he's a player that's capable of hitting at least 25 home runs if he plays a full season with a solid, you know, 270, 280 kind of a batting average. So that will play.
So another Mikhail Franco.
Yeah. I mean, I think Franco might have a little more upside, but there, you know, I think he's in that same kind of class. Astadio, he's one of those guys that is, you know, he's sort of a unicorn, like you said. He just makes so much contact. He never strikes out. And like Barnes, you know, it's so hard to find a catcher that's actually capable, a catcher eligible player, I should say, that's capable of giving you a decent batting average. I mean, most of these guys are going to hit 220, you know what I mean? And Astadio is just one of those guys that, in a good year, he could hit 300 because he makes so much contact. So he's interesting to me for sure.
All right. Any other names in this range or maybe someone that I didn't mention that you like?
No, I think you got it pretty well covered there.
Tyler O'Neill, we mentioned earlier. Lewis Brinson is one to watch out for. Besides that, guys, it is rough down here. So don't jump out of the seat of your pants to go add any of these guys. Christian Stewart's one to watch. Nate Lowe, if he gets called up for the Rays. Kyle Tucker, keep an eye on those guys. It's more the minor leaguers that you want to pick up when they come up to the major leagues, Bo Bichette. So, guys, that's all we have for today's show. In fact, you got some bonus content because we were gone for so long. There was so much to cover. So thank you again for being patient. And, Andrew, it was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks a lot, Bobby. Hope we can do it again soon.
Sounds great. And thanks to the sponsors of today's show, Pristine Auction. Make sure to check out what you can get for your cave at pristineauction.com, PRISTINE. And thanks also to TickPick for the opening day tickets. And you can get $15 off an order of $99 or more by entering the promo code FPROS15, all one word at checkout. Again, that's $15 off an order of $99 or more by entering the promo code on TickPick, FPROS15. For Andrew Seifter, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.